And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Program note, tomorrow during this time, we have planned to have the president of the Iowa Board of Regents on for the entire hour. Bruce Rastetter will be with us. We hope you'll join us for that and send us your email questions or questions via Iowa Public Radio's Facebook page or tweet us at IPR Talk. Tomorrow, the entire hour, scheduled to be with President of the Iowa Board of Regents, Bruce Rastetter. A group of Iowa State University students have designed what they call a 21st century outpost. It's a military outpost created to alleviate post-traumatic stress in soldiers. At least that's the idea behind it. In harm's way, interior design for modern combat is the brainchild of Iowa State University interior design professor and chair Lee Kegley. Lee Kegley is joining us in our studio in Ames. Hello, hey, Professor Kegley. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. How are you, Ben?
I'm fine, Lee. Also with you is Maricel Lloyd, an Iowa State University graduate student. Hello, Maricel. I understand you like to be called Lloyd.
Yeah, Lloyd's great.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about military, so you might as well go with the last name.
Exactly. Let's get in our combat boots and go accordingly. Let's talk about this idea. Lee Kegley, I understand this idea came to you a few years ago. How?
Listening to a couple of programs, actually, but primarily one on PBS that was interviewing soldiers who had come back from combat and were dealing with post-traumatic stress disorder, and it seemed to me that the issues that they were dealing with, the fact that after going out on a combat sortie and coming back to a combat outpost, that they never felt safe, they never felt that they could actually talk or relax or other than working out or doing something to try and take their mind off of what had happened. But they never actually felt like the environment that they came back to gave them a respite until the next morning. And it struck us that that was an interior design problem, that the environment the soldiers were occupying wasn't actually supporting them emotionally.
Mm. So describe what they would come back to before we get into what your group came up with. Why would that surrounding, the home, so to speak, they came back to, the quarters, not be relaxing in its interior design?
Well, you're in a combat outpost. You're at the forwardmost section of the deployment series. So you go to a main base, a forward operating base, and then a COP, a combat outpost. The combat outpost is actually for soldiers who are actually operating within harm's way. As such, it has a pretty temporary nature. There's often tents. Sometimes in hot zones like the deserts in Afghanistan or Iraq, they're tents that are coated with urethane foam. But basically, it's a tent. It's a fabric enclosure. You come back, you lay on a cot that is exactly the same kind of a cot that was designed for soldiers in the 1910s and 1920s in the First World War. And a lot of the issues concerning privacy and the ability to either meditate or deal with a difficult situation, those actually are really hard to accommodate in close quarters that don't necessarily have the strength of a facility you might find in, let's say, a forward operating base.
Mm-hmm. So let me turn to you, Lloyd. You are a veteran. You've not been in combat, I understand. Is that correct?
That's right.
And your husband has. He lived in a combat outpost in Iraq, which undoubtedly gave you some insights in this project. Tell us, what did you hone in on as sort of key factors that would improve the interior design?
So I have a lot of friends that have been deployed, and my husband was working as a contractor when he was overseas. And so he was able to enjoy a few more, security benefits than maybe a common soldier would. Like Lee was saying, they're mostly tents and it's temporary structures. And that's, to psychologically benefit the soldiers. They're, thinking, oh, I'm here. This looks like, a temporary structure. I'm not going to be here forever. But then they come back and it's the same thing that they were at 2 years ago, still sitting there. And I think for the friends that I have known, there's such a departure from the norm out there. Mm-hmm. And they're dealing with things that are so extreme that there was a hard time. I think there's a difficulty. Some of the students in the through the course, we were talking about what would be the best way to go about making them feel safe or bringing that idea of safety to them. And we thought about, you know, home, the ideas of home, that that's safety. But in a combat zone, that isn't necessarily the best course of action. You know, they need to be at the ready. And there are maybe things about introducing elements of home that wouldn't necessarily be conducive for staying at the top of your game, I guess, being ready
right.
for action.
You don't necessarily want people to relax like they're at home.
Right, right. Right. But they do. You do need to have some way for them, like Lee was saying, to deal with the stresses they're going through. And so we needed to have a place that was a middle ground for that kind of.
I hear you using words like safe, but, I mean, safety is something that can be achieved through design, but really a soldier out in combat is not, and I'll just say this kind of crassly, fooled by design. A soldier will know whether a structure is safe or not and whether it's just simply there for design. Am I interpreting that wrong?
Possibly. So the idea that you're thinking of safety, if you were in a tent and it was coated with pop, you know, urethane foam, with there was a concussive blast that went out on outside your structure, say 10 feet away, that would not, you would not feel safe necessarily.
No.
With that kind of a barrier between you. However, if you did have, for instance, a SACON lightweight aerated concrete with a Kevlar laminated exterior on a barrier between you and that 10-foot away concussive blast. That is not only psychologically safer for your well-being mentally, but it's physiologically safer.
Okay,
your body
so that, those are the type of design changes you were talking about. Lee, perhaps you can jump in here. Just
sure.
give us an idea. I don't know, quickly walk us into one of these structures that you feel, I know you had many solutions here, but walk us into it and show us in our mind's eye what is different here that makes a difference, you think.
There's a lot of different solutions. In fact, we had 7 different solutions that were completely and fully developed, some of them more theoretical than others. All of them, I think, were ultimately buildable. But the ideas basically center on increasing a degree of personal privacy, some flexibility. What happens right now in a tent is, in order for me to make more space for myself, I have to basically shove everything over to one side or try and pack up a cot. The walls beside me are just made up of hanging ponchos or hanging body armor. It's not conducive to a sense of self or a sense of place. So if you take into account having simplified and fortified the perimeter of the building in which you're currently occupying, the next thing to look at is what's a more comfortable, what's a more comfortable way to make a cot work? And can I actually have a cot that isn't a cot, that's actually more along the lines of a microtel and that's surrounded by an easily assemblable or easily disassemblable series of panels that allow me to have a small degree of privacy without cutting myself off from the action or the necessity to be quickly deployed.
Mm-hmm. We want to talk with a serviceman who has served in Afghanistan in just a moment. But
great.
But I wanted to have you connect this design with the stated goal of alleviating, somehow lessening post-traumatic stress disorder. Where is the connection there?
Well, so when my husband came back, and I think that's pretty common, any loud noise, sudden noises made him extremely uncomfortable. And when we had the chance to go out to Camp Dodge and they were practicing one of their live fire exercises while we were out there. And I know that for a lot of the students, and I think even Lee, I had a kind of an experience of, wow, that is so different than what I'm used to. And it's frightening. Mm-hmm. And for the soldiers, they deal with that and it almost becomes white noise. And the times when it's not white noise is when things are happening to them, to the people right next to them, when they're dealing with things that are even above and beyond just say, acoustically hearing that that fire, things that can happen to them, and that it affects them more for a longer period of time than just, say, a regular experience. That's what post-traumatic stress is
right.
about.
Right. So how do you solve that with design in this context, Lloyd?
So I think the problem maybe is the idea of saying design, because we're talking about experiential design or the way that they are living out there. And any kind of protection, whether it's you give them a Kevlar helmet or you give them a flak jacket or you give them a structure where they can be physically safe in, all of that is going to lend to a more stable mental state. I mean,
but isn't that already happening? I would assume it would be Kevlar jackets and helmets.
Yeah, up to a certain extent. There, in addition to that, though, there's also the need to relax. That's a problem. Right now, the armed services, I think, correctly view when I've been out in harm's way, if I've had an unpleasant experience, if for some reason a buddy got hurt or a buddy got killed or I got injured or someone ambushed us and it was necessary for me to kill someone else, for me to process that information, I've got one evening, and then the next day, generally speaking, the idea is you get back on the bicycle and you ride again. So you go back out into combat and you learn that that's just part of the job. What happens when you get home is all of those unprocessed data moments come back. All of that unprocessed data gets processed sooner or later. And the common complaint that we heard from a number of the soldiers with whom we spoke was that they never felt that they could exhale. They never felt when they came back during the 30 days on, 30 days off period, was that there wasn't a space where they could actually exhale, where they could actually feel like, okay, I can actually now talk about what's going on with me.
And mentally let my guard down to some extent and process it. I see what you mean.
There's also an incredible shortage of chaplains. They sometimes come by once a month, sometimes less than that. There's really no space other than the mess hall or a mess tent for someone to actually be by themselves or actually sit down with someone who's an advisor of that sort. All of those, a number of the students have created a space that is useful for relaxation, and some of them separated those from the actual sleeping tent so that there's an activity and a relaxation space as well.
We have less than 10 minutes left. I want to welcome also to our discussion Nathan Drake, originally from Guthrie County, I understand, but now living in Idaho, where we reach him today, a veteran who served in the U.S. Air Force in Afghanistan as an E-4 senior airman in 2012 and 2013, spent a tour in Afghanistan about a half year there. Not on active duty, I understand. Nathan Drake, you just got out last week. Welcome to our program.
Thank you, sir.
Tell us, you've been listening along here to this. What do you make of these ideas? I don't know the degree to which or if you suffered from any PTSD. What do you think of these ideas of sort of not being able to catch your breath out there in the field and that really you need a space to be able to process that feels more secure by a design?
Being Air Force, I wasn't really like directly in combat, but being at the base that I was, we'd still take indirect fire and stuff from mortars, and the noises and stuff that they were talking about earlier, that really kind of gets into your head a little bit. I think reading the article that was online, a lot of it sounds really good in theory, but placed into action, I don't think it's actually going to work out too well.
Why not? Why specifically do you have some hesitancy there?
A lot of the from friends that I've talked to, etc., combat outposts are directly set up by the soldiers themselves. There's a couple of documentaries you can actually watch that was actually shot by soldiers that are on Netflix, Restrepo and Korngal. It's a combat outpost in Afghanistan that's literally set up by them. They got dropped off out in the middle of nowhere, and they had to set up a post Overwatch that they, had to run their stuff out of, whether they're doing just sitting there watching all the traffic going on in the mountains, or if they are going and walking out and doing patrols. So a lot of that stuff, it would be awesome if it works and it's going to protect you a little bit more from gunshots and mortars, etc. But ultimately, it will need to be set up by, the people that are actually out there, if it's going to take more than, somebody not fully knowing what's going on but to set it up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And let me go back to Lee Kegley here, who's leading this project. So you have, I know, a number of criteria. We don't have much time left, but the practical nature of setting these things up, of cost, I'm sure that was all figured into what you had to work with.
Absolutely, Ben. Thanks, Nathan. Thank you for your service. We took that into account completely. All of the students' work was designed to be very portable and easy, intuitive to set up. Some of them worked on tent structures that would be alternate structures for just poles in the center of a tent that would allow for a greater degree of flexibility and ease of construction. One of the students also even took into account that sometimes a combat outpost is abandoned when it's left, and this was designed to be culturally appropriate so that when it was left, the people who were in Delaram, in this case, an adjacent Afghani village, would feel that it was okay for them to take over the space and to use it in ways that be appropriate for them.
Nathan, go ahead.
Just quickly, Lloyd's design in particular was just based on simple 4x8 panels that could be put together really, really simply by a pair of soldiers in a variety of different configurations that would ultimately end up in quite a complex
Lloyd, what are these panels made of? How heavy are they? How blast resistant are they, for instance?
Well, since it's still the initial stages, there's almost an unlimited array of things that they could potentially made of. There's materials that are coming out with that, and that some that are just being developed. I think what Nathan was saying about how when you get your boots on the ground, you have to be very efficient and set up things really quickly. And there are certain structures that need to be in place right away, that it's important for the soldiers to be able to do that, was one of the things that we looked at when dealing with how can we put these together. I mean, to say that we're going to send troops in 2015 or 2025 or 2032 into combat zones in the same tents and the same cots that they were using in 1945, it should not be acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Nathan Drake, do you have any other thoughts, any suggestions or things that you would like this group to, going forward, make sure they have their eyes on when coming up with new designs?
I guess basically just those two documentaries that I talked about. I don't know if you guys actually have seen them or not.
I have seen both of them, yes.
We have too, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. We did.
That's what a lot of my Army friends were talking about that they have to deal with. I was in base. My room basically was like a metal shipping container, so yeah. I wasn't really too worried about things. But people who are farther out, they're either in tents or like that. So if they can come up with something that could be easily dropped off by a helicopter, that's going to give them a little bit more protection than, 4x8 sheet of plywood.
That's what you, yeah. Sometimes it's just plywood, huh?
Yeah, and it's the same plywood that was there 2 years ago, four years ago.
It's not hard to punch through that.
No, but for example, there are on the horizon, there are, which some of the students used in their work, there's a compressed Sakon board that is about the thickness of two sheets of plywood, but it's highly blast resistant. There's a lot of materials that aren't actually being used yet that really have a great deal of potential for safety.
We have just a couple minutes left. Talk a little bit, Lee and Lloyd, about where this goes from here. Is the DOD, Department of Defense, interested here? Do you need to develop it more? What is the path to perhaps getting it out in the field at some point?
We had a lot of positive response from the people that we spoke with at the DOD, and I think in order for it to gain ground and be perpetuate the, the word needs to get out there, and people need to start talking about it, and people need to make a bigger deal about the safety of our soldiers and what we can do and fabricate in order to keep them safer. And I think dealing with, like, we had one interior industrial design student, which was great to have him, and different things we can do like that in order to make it happen, you know, not just talk about it. We've developed these and the designs are there, and now it's about getting approval, about talking to people in the government who have the power to start fabricating these and to set it up so that the soldiers of the future can be benefiting from the work that we've done now.
Lee Kegley, very quickly in the minute we have remaining, do you think actually through design we can lessen the amount of suffering of soldiers returning from combat, not to mention also the cost it takes to treat these ailments, PTSD, through design?
Absolutely. Absolutely. The future of design lies in picking up the people who've been left behind by society and reintegrating them into civilization. And that one of those tasks is making sure that people that we, our government, have put in harm's way come back with the knowledge that we honor the sacrifices they've made on our behalf. And we can do that really, really well with design work.
Okay, thank you very much, Lee Kegley, professor and department chair of interior design at Iowa State University. Thank you for joining us in Harm's Way, Interior Design for Modern Combat. His idea that's being carried out by a team there that includes Maricel Lloyd, an ISU graduate student and veteran. Thank you for your service as well, Lloyd. And certainly, Nathan, thank you for your service and your thoughts this hour, Nathan Drake. He served in the Air Force in Afghanistan in 2012 and 2013. Thank you all very much.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Nathan. River to River is produced by Emily Woodbury, Lindsay Moon, Claire Roth. Sean McLean helped us out. Also thanks to Catherine Perkins, our executive producer.